This is In the Loop, coming to you live from WBEZ. It's Friday, and there's a lot to catch you up on in our weekly news recap. Chicago's still flirting with the number one spot, but not for good reasons. The city's air quality is one of the worst among major cities across the globe due to wildfire smoke coming in from Canada. Chicago Public Schools plans to lay off hundreds of employees and impose furlough days, trying to close a more than $730 million budget deficit. Meanwhile, ICE enforcement is up in Chicago with a handful of tense immigration encounters during traffic stops. Plus, Alexi Janulius is running for re-election as Illinois' Secretary of State, but his latest TV ads have folks wondering if he might soon declare his candidacy for Chicago mayor. And the Shedd Aquarium rescues 10 beluga whales from a shuttered park in Niagara Falls, Ontario. We'll get to those stories and much more with a panel of journalists. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. Hang tight. In the Loop is next. Good morning, Chicago. I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is In the Loop. As we do every Friday, it's time to catch up on what's been happening lately across Chicago and Illinois in our weekly news recap. That's where we take you behind the headlines with local journalists working on stories like these.
Chicago Public Schools officials explain why they're laying off hundreds of employees within the district.
These are all impacts that are disruptive to the education of our students, the learning experience, and ultimately the academic outcomes that we're projecting for next year.
Our air quality consistently ranking among the worst of any major city in the world today.
Dad, who is that? And why is he in our kitchen?
That's Alexi Janulius. He's everywhere fighting Trump.
Bye to Police Superintendent Larry Snelling, because he's clocking in for the last time after nearly 3 years on the job as superintendent.
At the table to break down those stories and more, Carrie Shepherd, Chicago reporter with Axios. Quinn Myers, Block Club Chicago reporter covering Wicker Park, Westtown, and Bucktown in City Hall 2. And Bob Hergeth, Chicago Sun-Times investigative reporter. Welcome back, folks. Good to see you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi.
I want to start with what everybody's talking about, that haze from the wildfires. Ugh. Yeah, so Chicago's actually living up to its second city nickname today. According to Swiss air quality company IQ Air, we've got the second worst air quality in the world right now. Mm. Yesterday, we were second to none. We had the worst air quality in the world. Residents were advised at the time to stay inside. Several outdoor activities around town were canceled. I'm wondering about you folks. Were you able to stay indoors, or did you actually have to go out there?
Mostly stay indoors. I was telling Carrie I was digging out old COVID masks, which I don't know if they're even effective anymore, but I'm pretending like they are for a couple of short walks. But I know they're, I mean, for people who have to work outside all day, like I hope they are masking and limiting their time outside, because it is super dangerous. It's really bad for you.
Yeah. Here at Navy Pier, we were feeling the effects. Some folks had, you know, their eyes were burning.
Oh yeah. We walked.
Chest pains.
I've been feeling my eyes all week, and even before, you know, knowing about how bad the air quality was, and I was like, and then I started to get a little throat. And I said, am I getting a cold? And then obviously it was the smoke, but you can smell it. You know, we live in a high rise and you could smell it as soon as we open our door, like in our hallways. Mm-hmm. And then I went over to Oak Street Beach to take some photos, and there were still people out. They did end up closing the beaches and outdoor pools and canceling some camps and stuff.
Sure did.
Yesterday afternoon. But there were a lot of people. It was very COVID vibes, like lots of people wearing masks, empty beaches, empty patios, which would normally be so full on a
beautiful
summer night.
Were you having flashbacks of 2020, yes. Bob?
Yeah, I had a headache yesterday in the office, but I was like, is this in my head or is this legit?
Literally.
But,
is it legit? Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, they made fun of me, the producers here, because I was feeling like the throat tingle.
Oh my gosh,
all morning.
It was so real.
And I forgot to connect it to the smoke, and everyone looked at me like, yes, that's exactly why you feel this way.
And
there's that too.
And lettuce.
Oh, yeah.
Did poisonous lettuce. We're living in a hellscape.
Oh, yes. Cyclosporiasis is going around, too. Yeah. So summer wildfires.
Can't have a salad. You can't go outside.
You can't go outside. You can't eat salad. What can you do? Yeah. So summer wildfire smoke, I mean, it's at this point becoming, I think, an annual event. But according to the data, not only, as I said, was it the worst air quality in the world yesterday, it's the worst in Chicago's history.
Wow. Yeah. Today or yesterday?
Yesterday.
Wow.
Was the worst in our history.
I'm not surprised. I mean, look around. It's so eerie. Like, I went to the gym yesterday, and this guy in the parking lot looked at me and said, "This is insane, man." And he did not need to specify what he was talking about. It's like, right. Oh, this is insane.
It's bringing folks together.
Is this what California deals with all the time?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, this is like it seems like it's a new phenomenon that is disrupting our lives, as opposed to, obviously, we're so used to snow and unfortunately at this point, polar vortex and cold. But like, this is now a new layer of things that is going to affect and disrupt our daily lives.
And it pokes a hole, you know, people like to say that the Great Lakes are this climate refuge.
Right.
We have all this fresh water and, you know, moderate temperatures now. But this is uninhabitable right now.
It is. It's supposed to get a little bit better later this evening. That is what meteorologists are saying. Saturday is also supposed to be much more clear in our skies, but it could return on Sunday. So
check your air filters.
Lucky us.
Yes. All right. Let's take a pause here and check in with WBEZ senior education reporter Sarah Karp, who's been standing by. Good morning, Sarah.
Good morning.
We got lots to talk about. You have been very busy with CPS reporting. Chicago Public Schools, for folks who aren't aware, it released its budget this week and revealed that, you know, drastic steps are being taken to fill a more than $732 million budget gap. So tell us more about the announcement this week, Sarah.
So this is actually pretty long awaited. We usually would get much more information about the budget in the spring, but CPS officials have been sort of grappling with how to deal with this budget deficit. And finally, what they announced this week is that they sent out on Wednesday layoff notices to almost 1,500 staff. That includes 760 teachers and about 800 aides. These are people who work in classrooms supporting kids. And they also, a week before, had announced that they had laid off about 162 people in central office. So that's a pretty steep number of layoffs, even for a school district that perennially does a rounds of layoffs as like enrollment shifts in the school district.
Mm. So what could this mean for students when they go back to school this fall?
Well, one really big thing is that the school district changed how they're allocating staff to school, increasing the number of student-to-teacher ratio by one. So what does that mean? You know, it's not like every classroom is going to have one extra student, but it means that there will be some larger class sizes. Mm-hmm. I think that's probably the bottom line. Also, with teacher aides, you know, a lot of those work with special education students. They, according to CPS, will have those aides in place, the ones that work with special education students. But the ones that are sort of assisting teachers in general, there will just be fewer of them. There'll be fewer adults in buildings. I guess that's the long and short of it.
Now, do the teachers already know whether or not they've been laid off?
On Wednesday, they got the official notices.
Okay.
But a lot of times, because schools have to approve their budgets in May and June, and so a lot of times the principals had told teachers, like, I approved our budget. I can see the bottom line is that you're not going to have a position here. So hopefully enough of them, you know, we're able to then take that information and apply for jobs, because right now is a really late moment to have to start applying for a job in a school, considering that, you know, a lot of those positions are going to be filled already.
What's the teachers union saying?
Well, they're saying they're not happy, which is not to be unexpected,
right.
But so they say that they're going to fight this. They want the governor to call a special session to increase education funding. They, you know, they say this is a big reason. There's another part of this too, because the school district said that if they do not get more money from either the state or the county or the city by mid-year in January, they're going to furlough staff for 5 days. These are non-student attendance days, but these are days that teachers would otherwise be able to use to do planning and training. Sometimes this is mandated training that they have to do. And so that's sort of a big deal, because also that's a cut in pay for those teachers of about, you know, more than 2%. And so the teachers union is definitely not happy about that. And neither are the other unions that work with employees, like the support staff union and also the principals union.
Well, here's a little bit of what Mayor Brandon Johnson had to say yesterday when I talked with him for our monthly Ask the Mayor segment.
We have a school district that is woefully underfunded by the state of Illinois. The structure that the state of Illinois passed in 2017, calling for an equity-based funding structure, the law committed to fully funding our schools across the state by 2027. And here we are approaching 2027, and the state has not come through.
So, Sarah, the mayor wants state lawmakers to call a special session in Springfield to approve some extra funding. What is the likelihood, you think, of that happening?
What Governor Pritzker has said is he would love to give schools more money, but that he just doesn't have it. And so far, you know, he has not, and neither has Democratic leaders, been very receptive to some of the ideas to increase revenue through, you know, various taxes that would then produce more money for schools. So, you know, right now it doesn't seem like the state is open to calling a special session and doing something. But, you know, things do change. Yeah. And one of the things that people are saying is that if the state legislature calls a special session for the Bears, that would be a prime moment for them to do something for schools. Mm-hmm. And, you know, maybe the optics of that would, you know, would be pretty strong. I mean, one thing to note is that across the state of Illinois, there are school districts that are having to lay off staff. Across the state of Illinois, there are school districts that are, you know, grappling with deficits. So it's mm-hmm. not just Chicago.
Right.
And so that's a point to be made. It's not just Chicago. A lot of people are feeling the pressure.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's say bye now to Sarah Karp, who actually has the day off today. So we really appreciate you checking in with us, Sarah.
Well, have a good day.
Thanks so much. We're going to continue the conversation about this CPS crisis with our panelists here on the Weekly News Recap. We've got Carrie Shepherd of Axios, Quinn Myers of Block Club Chicago, and Bob Hergeth with the Sun-Times. Quinn, what do you think? Could we be looking at a potential teacher strike in a few weeks?
You know, as Sarah kind of outlined, I think the ire of the teachers union will be focused on Springfield, on J.B. Pritzker pushing for more state funding. They are not going to go after City Hall, especially when their hand-picked candidate, Brandon Johnson, mm-hmm. is on the fifth floor, right? Who was a former CTU organizer, right? And a teacher, of course.
That's right.
So I'm certainly not expecting a strike. I think they are going to try to raise hell, you know, on the state side. But yeah, it's a big question of where mm-hmm. is this money going to come from and how much TIF money is the city going to give CPS? They gave them over $500 million last year in the TIF sweep, which was somewhat controversial. Some aldermen pushed back against that and said those funds should be reserved for, you know, economic development projects. We've right. seen some big TIF deals go through City Hall just this past week. You know, the Chicago Fire Stadium got more than $400 million in TIF money. Mm-hmm. Foundry Park, the partial Lincoln Yards replacement, is up for over $200 million
right.
from a variety of sources. So
yeah, and we'll dig further into
A whole question of where is this money going to come from? And then, you know, City Hall has its own budget woes.
Well, for sure. And Bob, to Quinn's point about the fact that Mayor Johnson's a former teacher and then lobbyist for the teachers union, do you think that this puts him in a difficult position?
Well, I mean, I'd say a couple things. Well, first of all, I know a lot of the coverage is focused on the CTU or the politics of it, and that's all legitimate and obviously relevant and newsworthy. But, you know, as somebody whose older kids some years ago went, you know, were in CPS schools, you know, I also take a step back and look at the parents and the kids, right? And the chaos of this system mm-hmm. that I, you know, my family personally experienced back when my kids were in the school system.
Mine too. My kids just left. And I just remember each year the teacher swaps, like just being without teachers for classrooms periods of time.
Yeah, the uncertainty. And when my kids were in kindergarten, it was like, they're like, we may have 50 kids this year in your class for kindergarten. And 2-3 days into the year, they ended up figuring it out. But it was just every year. So the unpredictability, the instability of the system
right.
is, you know, I know that some of the, like I said, like we're talking about the teachers now, that's fine. My wife's a public school teacher, but, you know, at the same time, it's the kids having to experience this uncertainty and the parents is really problematic.
Another thing that the mayor is going to have to grapple with, finding a new police chief. Mm-hmm. Superintendent Larry Snelling's last day was on Wednesday. And Carrie, some of the aldermen are arguing that Johnson shouldn't get to make the permanent pick so close to the mayoral election coming up in February.
Yeah, between the lines there is that some of them, these are probably, I don't know exactly who they are, but I imagine mayoral opponents, of which the mayor has quite a few.
Well, Anthony Beale was one of the loudest speakers.
Yes, he is one that goes against the mayor pretty consistently. And they would maybe say ahead of the election, one in which the mayor, and unless he told you yesterday differently, hasn't even declared his candidacy for re-election, they might say, well, that should fall to the next mayor. However, we can't really go another year without a CPD superintendent. Yeah. And I think the argument would be, you know, we were talking in the green room before about same reason that they argued, you know, President Obama shouldn't pick someone for the Supreme Court. Well, that's a life appointment.
Right.
A new mayor can come in and do a new superintendent, as they often do. They clean house and they pick their own administration. So, that's going to be a big responsibility for whomever takes the seat, whether it's Mayor Johnson again or, Alexi Janulius or whomever they think is going to win next year. But yes, that has to probably happen before the next mayor is in City Hall.
And they're making a big assumption that Brandon Johnson is not going to get reelected, right?
Right.
And that's a
right.
big assumption to make.
Right.
That is a big assumption to make. Now, in the meantime, of course, Officer Fred Waller is the interim superintendent until things are figured out on that end. Now, I want to go back to our mention of the election coming up, because we're also hearing growing speculation that Secretary of State Alexi Janulius might enter the race, Carrie. Have you been seeing some of the ads?
Yeah, I wouldn't say that speculation is entirely new. That's, you know,
It's growing.
It's growing. He is a very prolific fundraiser. He has something like $20 million compared to
21 million more than Johnson,
million.
At least.
He's been rolling out these ads, which I might say, I wonder if they use the same agency WBEZ used. They looked very similar to the Mary Dixon Patrick Smith ads where they were in the kitchen.
Might have been the same
listeners.
Kitchen, yes.
but he's been rolling out these ads where he doesn't say entirely. I mean, to be fair, he does tout his bona fides as a Secretary of State. I made the DMV more efficient, mm-hmm. you know, all these other things.
I'm going after Trump.
Yeah, I go after Trump. He played clips of his testimony in front of Congress about book bans. So, you know, I would say also his opponent in the Secretary of State race is a fairly, statewide unknown name. This woman in Joliet, I'm blanking on her name. So he probably has that in the bag. So the big question is, do you want to jump into the race for mayor? He has, you know, Janulius, he ran for senator some time ago. He's won most of his races except for that big one. So,
well, the time's fast approaching for him to let us know.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, 2 weeks, right?
Well, July 28th is when candidates can start collecting petition signatures.
Who else is running? Remind us.
So, of course, we have Susana Mendoza, the outgoing Illinois comptroller, who is certainly running a more moderate some would say conservative campaign, to at least more compared to Brandon Johnson. We have former CHA board chief Matt Brewer, who had a very public tussle with Johnson over appointing the CHA CEO earlier this year. We have George Cardenas, former Chicago alderman. We have, it's going to be
Mike Quigley.
Right. Thank you. Several kind of outside candidates. The money question is a big deal, and Brandon Johnson only has about $600,000 in his campaign account. You know, Mendoza, $1.6 million, Alexi, $21 million. I mean, it's pretty staggering. I do think that we will see in the next couple months big money coming in for Brandon Johnson.
But money isn't everything.
Money is not everything.
Right?
It's certainly not everything.
Because didn't Vallis have more money than Johnson?
Yeah, it's not a lock at all. But I do think if you're going to compete, you do need funds.
Oh,
and
sure.
Right now, Brandon Johnson is not fundraising to a level that says he's going to be competing.
Right.
But again, we will see what the CTU and other unions do in the next few months.
Money is a factor when the front runners are running on fairly similar platforms. I mean, Vallis and Johnson were totally opposite sides of the spectrum.
Yeah.
And Janulius is going to be a little bit more moderate than Brandon Johnson. But yeah, I mean, that could be what could push you over the edge. And Janulius is a known name, in Chicago. Mm-hmm. Some of these people are a little less known.
Known name and even more known face at this point with all the ads. Sticking with campaign contributions, Bob, you reported on a controversial one recently. This one has nothing to do with the mayor's race, but it involved Senate President and Oak Park Democrat Don Harmon.
Yep. He is maybe not a household name, but one of the most powerful political figures in the state. And I've written about him on and off, as have some of my colleagues, about his campaign fundraising and who he's taking money from. A lot of special interests that have a lot of interest in legislation that comes before him in the General Assembly. And he took $50,000, which is a lot of money, obviously. And it was from an online gambling operation that the Illinois Gaming Board has said is operating illegally in Illinois and has been accused of predatory practices and stuff like that. So I did that story, and then he pledged to give the same amount back to different charities in response to our questions.
This is In the Loop. I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and you are tuned in to the weekly news recap, where we take you behind the headlines of the week's top local stories. Before the break, we got the latest on our region's dangerous air quality and Chicago Public Schools' drastic cost-cutting plans, but there's much more to get to.
Community leaders coming together just yesterday to address ice activity across multiple neighborhoods.
An accusation against a well-known Southside pastor.
Alders approving $425 million in TIF to support infrastructure development for a new 22,000-seat stadium for the Chicago Fire soccer team.
The Shedd Aquarium is helping out with a major rescue. They are preparing to take in beluga whales from a closed marine park in Canada.
Our panel today includes Carrie Shepherd, Chicago reporter with Axios, Quinn Myers, Block Club Chicago reporter covering Wicker Park, Westtown, and Bucktown, as well as City Hall, and Bob Hergeth, who's a Chicago Sun-Times investigative reporter. All right, so we're seeing immigration enforcement escalating even more here in Chicago. We've had at least four car encounters reported this week, Carrie. But I thought we weren't going to see those anymore. Wasn't there going to be an end to the traffic stops?
Well, yeah. I mean, what we thought was that it was going to be a little more targeted and they were going to actually follow warrants as opposed to doing sort of widespread sweeps in parking lots and neighborhoods. But, you know, I would say that, you know, and this is just like an awareness thing. I think, you know, this idea in neighborhoods, there has always, the fear hasn't probably gone away. I mean, neighborhoods like Pilsen and, but especially Little Village, they have looked differently. It's not like ICE fears completely dissipated. Mm-hmm. And the other thing on a national level is that, you know, if you recall, there was this huge push by the Trump administration to get more ICE officers and immigration officers, and there was, you know, these ads of like, you can make this much money, whatever. So these people, these officers went through this series of trainings to get up to speed, and now they're out on the streets, and they have these quotas and these very large numbers of anywhere from 2,000 to 3,000 people to get a day. And when you have quotas like that, you know, we've seen it with police, local police, when you have quotas of how many people to pull over, et cetera, things become fast and loose. And, you know, some of that is happening and some of that we're seeing. Community groups who have been so on the forefront of raising this awareness and telling people, you know your rights, you know, here's how we can help. As we all recall, everybody had the whistles that, you know, when ICE agents were moving into neighborhoods, they are ramping up those calls again because the fear is back. I mean, we've seen, you know, I think the other big missing part of this, and, you know, we can talk about this more on the local level, but is this accountability aspect. And I've been thinking about this a lot this week as someone, as all of us here have covered, you know, officer shootings in Chicago throughout the years. Sure. Is like, it's a big name, it's a big headline, and then you don't hear anything about it. Yeah. And you think, what happened with that family? What are they, you know, years later, maybe you have a settlement, but like, we're still like, what happened in Minneapolis? Mm-hmm. What happened with Alex Pretty?
And now it becomes, what happened in Houston?
Exactly.
Maine,
what happened in Maine?
Florida.
And, you know, we're going to continue to hear that because it's sort of this, you know, and I guess that DHS's Inspector General is looking into these, but this idea of the accountability and who's looking at what is a big question.
I want to turn now, Quinn, to an important investigation that Block Club did. This is into fraud at Loretto Hospital on the city's west side. Now, after the investigation, federal prosecutors brought criminal charges against three former executives. So what's the latest?
Yeah, and there are a couple of different cases here. This was a big deal, and kudos to my colleague Kelly Bauer, who really broke this story open a couple of years ago. So basically what happened in this one section of the cases, prosecutors have alleged that executives basically funneled funds to companies that were owned by some of these executives or their associates for goods and services that the hospital, that these companies did not actually provide to the hospital or were not necessary, basically. Mm-hmm. And this is tens of millions of dollars. So the latest update is that two of these executives, the former chief transformation officer, Heather Bergdahl, and former Loretto CEO, George Miller, are in line for this deferred prosecution agreement. Bergdahl has been confirmed for this. Basically, that means if she follows a certain set of terms, we don't know what they are, under this agreement with prosecutors, they will drop the charges in about a year. And there's prosecutors have said that there is a similar thing in the works for Miller. You know, we don't know the details of what that means, but often when we see these deferred prosecution agreements, it means they are cooperating in some way with prosecutors, possibly giving them information they need, testifying. You know, we don't know yet what that means. So that's the latest update. This comes as the Loretto cases, the other one, which involves a scheme for fake COVID tests.
Yes.
And everything. Two people charged in that case, those charges were dropped related to alleged misconduct at the U.S. Attorney's office in Chicago, right? And that's a whole other can of worms that we don't necessarily have to open up right now. But there was a lot of issues and controversy still going on. This has been 5-6 years in the making.
Oh, I remember when Kelly Bauer cracked that open, in
2022. Yeah. I mean, this has been the story that keeps on giving in some ways, unfortunately.
And Block Club's been owning it. Shout out to you all.
Shout out Block Club. Unfortunately, though, for the the people who rely on Loretto Hospital, a safety net hospital on the west side, some of the city's poorest residents really need that hospital.
Right.
These executives allegedly have totally fleeced the system.
Now, we'll get into, a religious leader making headlines this week. Bring us up to speed, Bob, on the allegations against the well-known Southside priest, Father Flager.
Sure. So again, just as the backdrop here, we're going on several decades of the Catholic Church's sex abuse crisis scandal, that started, it's sort of emerged in waves over the last, since the late 80s, essentially, and the latest wave kind of coming in 2018-19. When a lot of people thought this was over. And one of Chicago's better known Catholic priests, Michael Flager, who is the longtime pastor or a priest at St. Sabina's down in on the south side, has been accused several times now of sexual abuse allegations. He's always denied them. And the latest one emerged just, within days. And he, strenuously denies doing anything wrong and has claimed that, people are looking for a payout, maybe, filing lawsuits, looking for cash from the Archdiocese of Chicago, which is the arm of the church for the Chicago region, or at least Cook and Lake counties. It does also hint and highlight sort of a larger issue that's been emerging, which is the fairness to the accused, not just the accusers. I mean, the church has, to put it bluntly, in the past been lied so much, hid so much, committed so many crimes, frankly, that this current system that exists in terms of disclosure now is that when there's an accusation, the church makes it public before there's even criminal charges, let's say, before there's even maybe a lawsuit or any sort of evidence. They sideline the priest, they make it public, blah, 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 blah. And so, and now Flager and others are sort of pushing back, like, this is like, hurts us and is not fair because there's been no due process and stuff like that. So, which is, I do understand. But then again, the system exists because of duplicity on behalf of the bishops and other priests in the past and secrecy at this, at the effect of these children. So that's what's going on.
And Father Flager, I mean, he is a big deal in Chicago, right? And has such a diehard fan base, right? Of course, his parishioners back him, most of them, but also across the South Side and otherwise, he has this very ingrained support network who is literally having press conferences in support of him. And so that kind of, in some ways, muddies the waters around this. And it's hard to really know how to even think about this in these cases. But of course, they have to be taken seriously.
Hey, if you're just tuning in, this is In the Loop. I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and we are breaking down the biggest stories of the week with a panel of first-rate journalists. That was Quinn Myers of Block Club Chicago. We've also got Carrie Shepherd, a Chicago reporter for Axios, and Chicago Sun-Times investigative reporter Bob Hergeth in studio. I want to turn to what City Council was up to this week. Now, for several months, the council's zoning committee wasn't meeting at all. This was because of all that infighting over leadership of the committee.
Right.
Now they're just chipping away at that backlog of projects that were waiting to be approved. So just briefly run us through some major projects, Quinn, that got greenlit or blocked.
Sure. So the biggest one this week at this week's zoning committee meeting was Woodlawn Central Development. This is the sprawling multi-phase project near the Obama Presidential Center. Mm-hmm. And it's backed by the Apostolic Church of God, very well-known church. You know, the Brazier family has been running that for decades. And this, the first phase is going to include about 100 housing units, as well as a 160-room hotel, as well as a bunch of different public services. And ultimately, it could include up to almost 1,000 housing units right there in Woodlawn. And so it's this huge project that, you know, we see these projects like happening on the north side a lot, you know, Lincoln Yards, Foundry Park, the 78. So this is a big deal for the south side. And it comes as the Obama Center is, you know, literally almost across the street. So I think a lot of people are fans of this, although there is some pushback, too, of course, from people who are have ongoing concerns about gentrification and displacement. Yeah. Of course, this does include an affordable housing component as well for, you know, as many large projects do. Other than that, the Daily News Building, which is across the river from the Lyric Opera to Riverside Plaza, that got official Chicago landmarking. Seems like the owner is going to do some serious renovations in there and basically going to get a pretty big tax break. You know, if you are a landmark, you can get this Class L tax incentive to pay less property tax. So it seems like, you know, I think I'm not saying they weren't interested in, you know, keeping the beautiful Art Deco building, but I think they were also interested in getting that, you know, that break.
For sure.
But that's, I mean, this is one of my favorite buildings. I'm just looking at a picture of it now. And it really kind of sits in conversation with the Lyric Opera. Mm-hmm. They're like, you know, kind of dual buildings almost.
Right.
And of course, the Chicago Daily News, which went defunct in the 70s. But, you know, some of Chicago's most famous journalists and cartoonists made their way through there. Roy Coe and Carl Sandburg was a contributor back in the day. So
that's good news.
Pretty cool. And then there's a, you know, a series of other apartment buildings on the north side. Lawndale Redefined, a mixed use apartment building in North Lawndale on Ogden Avenue. And a new community center is coming to Altgeld Gardens, after school programs and a new gym
there.
The
council was busy this week.
Yeah, they
week.
Got a lot done. And I think, you know, aldermen like these projects, right, because they can go to their ward and say, look at what I'm doing. Of course, of course, you know, just because, as we all know, just because you get zoning approval does not mean the project necessarily gets built. They still have to get financing and go through, you know, other whole other process too.
Well, I want to stick with development, Carrie. You had a story this week about development in the area where Chicago's stockyards used to be.
Yes.
What's happening?
Yes, the Misner Group is a big developer around here. And I went down there because it's just this very interesting duality of these brand new warehouses next to these old factories, some of which are still operating, which maybe some people don't know. Maybe people do know that. I think we, you know, the stockyards closed in the 70s. But, I mean, there are still operating functional buildings there. But the idea for them is that the traits of like being close to downtown, being close to the expressway, but also they're sort of building these things what they call on spec, because they don't necessarily have a tenant locked in, but their thinking is that someone is going to say, oh, hey, the space is already here for me. When you talk about the stockyards and a lot of these places around the city, you also have to account for millions of dollars to remediate the land because it's so toxic. So they've already done all that work. They've laid the groundwork for someone to just come in and plop in. They have all the standard things of, you know, what, 32-foot high ceilings and docks and stuff for warehouse space, and then they have sort of administrative space as well. So it's really interesting. I was walking around the stockyards, as one does, and, you know, it is
this, like, just lurking.
So much fun. And it is this, I mean, it's this fascinating history, of course. You could spend so much time just digging in the history of the stockyards, a dark history of labor and, you know, animal welfare and everything, but also just like this reimagined place of what could this be and what could this become is pretty interesting. It's pretty interesting to see this old, you know, graffiti dilapidated building next to like brand new parking spots with like charging stations for electric vehicles.
Back to City Council, Quinn. Alders weighed in on referendums for November's ballot. What questions are Chicagoans going to see or not see on election day?
So this was a political fight this week and last week over what you could say doesn't matter at all, because these are non-binding ballot questions. Okay. You know, you'll remember.
How dare you, Quinn.
I'm sorry to Governor Pat Quinn, who really cares about these a lot. And, you know, they are a good gauge of public opinion, but they're non-binding. And so these appear on your ballot next to the candidates that you see.
Well, it gives people the idea that they get to weigh in on policy.
Yes, of course. But basically, the city council can put up to three on the ballot. They have put two so far, and they blocked all of the mayor's proposals. The ones that are definitely going to be on there are about gunshot detection technology, pushed by Marty Quinn, Southwest Side Alderman, in response to the mayor canceling the ShotSpotter contract, basically asking if Chicagoans, if we should bring that back or a different kind of similar technology. And there's one from Alderwoman Nicole Lee asking if the city should establish a standalone fairgrounds or festival grounds, similar in some ways to like Summerfest in Milwaukee, instead of having these kind of rotating parks and, you know, the disruptions that we see to parks all over the city when we have these summer festivals. But city council's coming back next week to debate a few more. Okay. And one could include a proposal from the mayor if the city should seek federal reimbursement over lost revenue and tax revenue from Operation Midway Blitz. That has been blocked so far, but could be brought back next week.
Speaking of the November election, Bob, Republican candidate Darren Bailey is facing criticism. This is for his latest attack on his opponent, Pritzker. What did he do?
Oh, yeah. He highlighted Pritzker's some photos and captions from Pritzker's high school yearbook.
Okay.
And just some silly stuff. I don't really understand all.
I mean, was Pritzker doing something wrong?
He was like photographed, and there were some kind of odd references to just being a teenager or something. And Darren Bailey said something like, you know, tell us what this all means. And I'm not defending Pritzker, but like, I mean, there were. But, you know, but it came across to some people as kind of a cheap shot and kind of lowbrow, and especially when there are a lot of very legitimate, you know, questions that could be raised pertaining to now, not back in high school. You know, I mean, I was an idiot in high school, you know, so and a borderline idiot now. So like, you know, so I'm glad that.
Bailey thought he had a real zinger there. But
insinuation was that he was gay, right? That Pritzker was gay was some of the insinuation.
Funny things on your knees and drugged for drugs. Yeah. And it just sounds like, dumb high school banter. And
I don't know what's in my high school yearbook.
I mean, that's not it for Bailey if he thinks he's – I mean, that's not what's going to get – that's not what people, I think, are focused on. That's not the
silly photos.
Ideal attack on Pritzker, which there's plenty of policies they could go after for moderates and Republicans.
All right. Anyway, I want to run through a couple of music festival headlines here. So, you know, we know it's a big part of why we love living here in Chicago. And, you know, while they're often a great way to enjoy the weekend – we've actually got alarming news about these ones. So there were serious allegations, Bob, you covered this, involving the Country Thunder Music Festival. If folks aren't familiar, this is just over the border in Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. What's going on there?
It's near Twin Lakes. So it's right essentially across from McHenry County, which is a far northwestern suburban area. And it's a 4-day festival. It's actually been going on since the 90s, so 30 years-ish. And country music has exploded in popularity among young people. So this festival's become more and more popular. It draws huge from the Chicago area, teenagers, young adults. And and I looked into police reports, and there have been rumors, for a long time about sexual assaults and of young female concert goers, and the police reports bear that out.
And it's still happening.
That is still happening. There was at least one reported last year, the year before, possibly the year before, and definitely the year before that too. And those are just that were reported to police. There have been indications that others in years past have, you know, maybe bypassed the police but gone to the hospital.
Right.
And so, and some of these involve, or appear to involve, guys roofing the girls. So it's really troubling on a lot of levels.
Any precautions being taken to keep folks safe at concerts?
Well, I mean, the police say that they do their best. The Kenosha County Sheriff and some other departments up there are contracted to come in and provide, to patrol and whatnot. And there's private security as well. The organizers wouldn't talk to me beyond a lawyer that they, said to direct all questions through him, and then didn't answer any of my questions, which was kind of surprising given that this is the 21st century and, so many of their customers,
are
young women.
Yeah. That's unfortunate. We'll definitely keep an eye on what's going on there. But I want to touch real quick before we pause here, Quinn. You've got an update on a former but very popular music festival making headlines this week. What's going on with Pitchfork?
Yeah, Pitchfork, which ended its Chicago run in 2024 after its 2024 festival in Union Park. Beloved local festival. I went many times, had a great time there every year. And if you've been there, if been around the Chicago music scene, especially on the North Side, you might know Mike Reed. He's the co-founder and organizer of this of Pitchfork. Mm-hmm. Also runs Constellation and Hungry Brain, kind of in the Roscoe Village area.
Right.
Basically, Condé Nast, which owns Pitchfork, is now suing him over a dispute about more than $500,000, saying that he misappropriated those funds after they pulled the plug on the festival in 2024. Basically, it's a question over whether he needed those funds for so-called wind down costs, you know, to, pay vendors and other people involved. And, you know, for several weeks, he thought that the festival, the 2025 festival, was going forward. So it's a bit of a mess. They are, you know, there's this dispute over about $500,000.
Yikes.
So that's not good. So we'll see how that shakes out.
Let's jump back into the home stretch of our weekly news recap with local journalists Carrie Shepherd, Quinn Myers, and Bob Hergeth. So, Bob, when it's not 95 degrees and we don't have to deal with smoke from wildfires, something that people often like to do is go to the forest preserves, right?
Very true.
But you did an investigation in depth into a popular park amenity. So fill us in on that.
Sure. I mean, since COVID, we don't have to be in the office every day. So when I'm not
speak
in the office.
Speak for yourself, Bob. Speak for yourself.
Well, some of us. And so I'll sometimes ride my bike to and take my laptop and actually work in a forest preserve grove on the northwest side and just use my hotspot or whatever.
Must be nice.
Yeah, it's very nice.
You know where I am when you're doing that? Yeah,
I suspect
here.
I know. anyway, so I do that a lot. So I'm out at the forest preserves a lot. And and one thing I didn't really realize until I just got to talking to people is how many conflicts there are between these forest preserve at these forest preserve groves and pavilions and stuff like that. You can rent them and get a permit and reserve them, but a lot of people don't realize that or don't seem to care, and they show up and they plop their stuff down and claim dibs, and then if somebody with the permit comes, it's like, well, you got to move, and no, I'm not. And sometimes the police get involved. Sometimes there's there are real problems, arguments and threats and stuff, but never, anything super severe. But a lot of times it's just sort of grumbling and people then have to move. But it's kind of a common conflict out that way. Mm. So that's what my story sort of centered on.
Love that. Well, we're going to move the conversation from the forests to bustling Michigan Avenue, Carrie. Is the Mag Mile experiencing a bit of a revival, would you say?
Yeah, I mean, it depends on the time, is always the case. Foot traffic is still, during the day, is still down from, say, 2019, because, as Bob says, fewer of us are working in offices.
Right.
Yes, you excluded Sasha. But,
I'm not bitter, don't worry.
And, when we're working...
I love it here.
When we're working downtown, I know this from formerly working at Navy Pier, you tend to run your errands after work. Maybe you stop in a store here, you stop here. But the part that's the uptick is that there are more people downtown and in these retail corridors, think of Fulton Market, Armitage, in the evenings. And the big thing with that we've been hearing a lot about with Michigan Avenue is that it's becoming more experiential. They're putting these experiences there, less just come and shop, more go to a magic show, go to Harry Potter. They're putting in this thing, The Cube, which is this British game show thing. In the old Rock
Hello Kitty Cafe?
The Hello Kitty Cafe. Which there's the people in line told me last week it's not that bad. It's like 30 minutes because I did the story about how we're always waiting in lines everywhere. And then, they're putting this F1 arcade in at the old Rock Bottom Brewery, which is, if you remember that space, a little off the Mag Mile. So people are
showing on.
People are showing up. I mean, I have to say, this narrative that's been going on for a long time is that no one's downtown. People are downtown.
Trust me.
I'm weaving and bobbing all the time through people on the sidewalk.
Trying to get through.
Yeah, people are there.
Quinn, Wicker Park and Bucktown have a strategy for driving more business to neighborhood shops and restaurants. Talk to us about Meet Me on Milwaukee.
Yeah, so this is a program that launched last year from Alderman Daniel Espada and the Wicker Park Bucktown Chamber of Commerce. The last Sunday of August, September, and October, Milwaukee Avenue in the heart of the neighborhood from North Avenue to Ashland, which is basically the heart of Wicker Park, gets shut down to cars and buses, and it's just totally open to pedestrians. This year, they're bringing it back, similar last Sundays of those months. They're adding a little more programming, maybe some exercise classes, some live music. But data that they tracked last year through foot traffic data found that it really did boost foot people, bring people into the area. And businesses that I spoke to were pretty happy about it. Mm-hmm. I think they fine-tuned it a little bit this year, but it's a cool, fun thing. And, you know, some people want to see this happen once a month, all year long. Some people want to see it happen every Sunday. Some people even want it to be a permanent closure.
Oh, okay.
That's not happening yet.
That.
but I did talk to Alderman LaSpada, who said it could possibly pick up the cadence next year as they kind of streamline how this all gets shut down and volunteers and all that.
While you have the hot seat, Quinn, Block Club recently had a story I was very interested in. The Shedd Aquarium is saving some beluga whales. What is happening?
Yeah, so there's this place near Toronto.
It's in Niagara Falls, Ontario,
Ontario.
And it's called Marineland. And I may or may not used to frequent it as a child.
And
carry on.
Okay, great. Well, maybe not great because it has closed. And Canada basically passed a law in 2019 banning the keeping and use of whales, dolphins, and porpoises. Is that how you say that? For breeding or entertainment purposes. Mm-hmm. So basically the Shedd and a bunch of other aquariums are kind of rescuing these beluga whales from Marineland. There have been a series of deaths, whale deaths at Marineland since 2019, according to the CBC.
Yeah.
I'm intrigued. These whales, they're not swimming here. They're flying here. So
they're flying the whales over.
They basically will swim into this kind of stretcher. I'm looking at a picture of it and then get on an airplane.
Oh my gosh.
I'm assuming the airplane has water in it. And they will be transported here, and up to 10 will be taken in by the Shedd, which already has 8 beluga whales in its care. They're going to live in the Shedd's 3-million-gallon Abbott Oceanarium, which has 6 habitats.
So many things here. So Marineland closed to the public back in 2024, but it's remained in possession of these whales. And, you know, they basically said, we don't have the resources anymore to continue caring for them. And
sounds like they weren't totally caring
they
for
weren't
them.
They weren't caring for them
after
in the first place.
After they tried to export the whales to China, apparently, and the park's owner then, when that was rejected, threatened to euthanize
yeah,
them.
Yeah, he said, I have no choice but to euthanize if
unless
we can't
they
figure
could
it out.
Come to the U.S. So yeah. The Shedd and other aquariums have basically said,
and as a kid,
okay,
I had no idea that any of this was going on.
I mean, why would you? So, I mean, do you remember in the last, after Free Willy, we all started to get you mean the whales aren't happy being confined and performing for
it
us?
It just seemed like the happiest place. It was like one of our Disneylands, you know? Had
sorry,
the best
Sasha.
Jingle
Does this
ever.
Ruin your child?
It does. It had a very catchy. If you know. If you're listening right now and you even lived in Buffalo, you know. You heard it all the time. It had the most catchy jingle.
Good for the Shedd, though, looking out for
it. Seemed like a fun time. But no, this is terrible. But I'm glad that the Shedd is
stepping up. Yeah.
Stepping up to help. Well, any stories that you're working on next week that we should know? Real quick, I got 30 seconds.
Following on Quinn's closing off Milwaukee, I'm interested in LaSpada's idea to make this everybody at Six Corners in Wicker Park go pedestrians can walk all at the same time. It's going to be madness.
Bob?
Another church group.
Okay.
I'm going to be writing about.
All right. And Quinn?
I'm writing about a guy in Bucktown who is converting a stretch of highway easement into a native prairie, somewhat without permission, but it might. They're going legit. They're
and
trying
you're
to go
out
legit.
Him?
Well, yeah. I mean, he sat for an interview and photos, so it's coming. But I think it's going to be okay.
Well, that's it for our weekly news recap. My thanks to Quinn Myers of Block Club Chicago, Gary Shepard of Axios, and the Sun-Times' Bob Hergeth. Now, that smoke is still in the air, and I never thought I'd say this as a Canadian, but yeah, I think it's right. Yep, blame Canada. Have a good weekend, folks.